All right, we're recording. I am here with Mr. Owen Hooper, a.k.a. Mouth Breather, not to be confused with the grindcore band Mouth Breather.
And by the way, fuck Mouth Breather.
You don't like them?
Fuck them. Fuck them. I had the name first of all.
Did you have the name first?
Absolutely, 100%. You can look at the fucking receipts. You go back to Bandcamp like the first week. I don't know if I can swear, if you can cut the swears
out. I don't care.
Out.
I don't care.
Okay, great. Fuck those guys. I swear to God. It's unbelievable because in 2015, I started the project. The problem is, I think that on a merit, and I don't want to, you know, sort of derail the conversation right away, but
no, please do.
On merit of the name alone, I get it, man. Actually, they deserve the name more than me. I don't want to say that on air, but at the same time, it's like, that's a grindcore ass name. So
it
I'm kind of the odd one out, but I had it first, so fuck them.
Although, I would say, I mean, I haven't listened to the other Mouth Breather too much, but I would assume that them calling themselves Mouth Breather is more of a, like, you're a Mouth Breather. And you calling yourself Mouth Breather is more like, yeah, I'm a proud Mouth Breather, right?
Exactly. Yeah, at least I have a sense of fucking self-awareness. These guys probably don't know what they're doing, man.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Yeah, that's hilarious. And you guys are actually about the same level of popularity as far
as the worst fucking part, dude.
Yeah,
that's the worst part is they were shit at first. Like, no one cared about them. They were literally just like a fly on my SEO. Like, I'd be on Google and I'm like, oh, what is this stupid band? The one difference is they don't have a space in their name. It's Mouth Breather, one word. So that's helpful. But then now, like 2 years ago, they released an EP and it did all right. And that's what really pisses me off. It's like, you're going to come in here. I'm fine. There's a million shitty bands with the name Mouth Breather, I'm sure. But you can't be a somewhat popular band too. That's just not cool with me.
Yeah. That's hilarious, man. Yeah. That, hell yeah. I'm glad that that's a can of worms.
I'm sorry, man. I mean, I have a lot. It's just tough. It's really tough dealing with shit.
Yeah.
Like
so your SEO. So do you check your Google Analytics and stuff? Is that something you're into?
It's actually my mom. That's what she does for a living. So it's kind of like it's sort of a family trade SEO,
right?
You know,
what does your mom specifically do? What's her job title?
Basically social media marketing. Right.
Okay.
But she did it before it became like a parasite on the internet, you know? Like,
yeah.
I respect what she does. She does it for people that are respectable people. But I feel like everyone with a fucking, I don't know, Instagram account now is like a social media marketer. And it's very insulting. Very insulting to my mom, who worked so hard to do what she does.
Yeah.
Bullshit,
yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of nuance to it. And like, you look at a lot of, for example, on Facebook, right? Celebrity pages, and they seem like it's a robot, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like a really weird one is R. Kelly's Facebook page is fucked. Like,
I can only imagine.
It's like total like robot compromise, but every once in a while he actually pops in there.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. What does he say too? I'm sure he's,
he defends, he only started, the only time I ever saw him was after he got convicted.
Christ,
and he was just like, I'm innocent, whatever. And I'm like, Jesus, R. Kelly, what the fuck are you doing, man?
If anything, that's the one thing you want your social media managers to deal with, bro. Like, don't go out there and just fuck shit up even more for yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Asshole, dude.
Instead, it's like just sharing like inspirational videos and dog shit and all that, mostly. Like, not dog shit, but dog videos. Like, that's R. Kelly's Facebook page. It's really bizarre.
Yeah, that's like 90% of those big Facebook pages now, too. It's just like reposting other people's content.
It makes them money in one way or another, I'm sure. I'm sure there's some kind of sort of like network of, you share this X amount of money, da 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 da. It's like a much more peer-to-peer kind of way of advertising, probably, and profiting off of it. That's what I imagine it is.
I mean, it works. People like that shit, so I don't know. It's toxic. It's just the scourge of the internet, but hey, works for Mike the Situation.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it works for other people too.
But we're here to talk about you, all right? So I'm curious about, I don't know how you got started. I know when you're in Victoria, that's the first thing I'm trying to get my hands on is I know you were in Victoria. I believe you spent some time in Toronto. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep.
And now you're in Montreal, correct?
You flipped it. I was in Montreal for 2 years and then I moved to Toronto last year.
Okay.
Right before the wraps, took it home. And that's when I knew I was going to basically be a lifer here, you know?
Yeah. Hell yeah. So when did you get started making like music in earnest, I should say? Like,
right.
Yeah.
That's a good question. Somebody asked me that yesterday, and there's kind of like two stories that I can tell, because the one story is my personal journey as a musician. I wrote a song for like my grade 6 girlfriend or whatever. And then I didn't see her for 3 months. And when we got back to school, because, you know, your grade six girlfriend, you're not like chilling all the time. Got back to school, and it turns out she was Catholic. She neglected to tell me that, which was information that I would have liked to have been disclosed. Because when you're a Catholic sixth grader, your parents are not cool with you dating people. Like, specifically Catholics, I've found. And I don't want to be inflammatory on this podcast. It's just something that I think
I found. Catholics are one of the rare kind of, like, open season sort of categories of people, to be honest.
Yeah. They've got thick skin.
My grandma's
skin.
Catholic too. It's all good.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, the Kennedys, all those, they're all good people. But you know, it was a problem. So I get back, wrote her this song, my first song. Surprised that I actually stuck with it after she broke up with me the next time she saw me. But that's, and then okay, and then I'm digressing here. But then
do you remember
the other
song? Do you remember?
Oh no,
no.
It was
okay,
it was garbage. It was super hot garbage. And in fact, it was definitely just another song. And I just stole like the melody and the chords and just wrote lyrics over it.
That's one way to write music though.
Oh yeah.
You just get better at it. In fact, all songwriting really is you just get better at stealing. Yeah, pretty much.
Everything is a remix. Great. Yeah. I don't know what that was. It was like a YouTube show.
YouTube video, yeah. I watched that in grade 12 drama class. He showed it to us and I was like, oh, hip teacher alert, you know?
Yeah. This guy gets it, man. This guy's with the culture.
Yeah. But that's something I am fascinated with is like the sort of like the kind of like is there's a randomness to the line of appropriation when it comes to, and I don't mean that like cultural appropriation, I mean like just like literally melodies and stuff, like when people choose to say it's theft seems completely arbitrary to me.
And I also enjoy that it is in a sense still just, it's like kind of like the 6 degrees Kevin Bacon thing but with cultural appropriation.
Yeah,
because as much as I am like a huge Beatlehead, it's like, you know, or like of the Black Keys and White Stripes are a great example. It's like, okay, if I'm like some white dude in my basement making a Black Keys ripoff band, it's still just like 3 degrees of cultural, you know, appropriation. So
yeah,
it just kind of gets muddied at that point. Like what is really taking from other artists and where is the line there? You know, I'm not going to do like a Tina Rewen cover band because that's very clearly, evidently like a cultural music force.
For sure.
But there's some areas where I'm like, I'm not really sure we have this mapped out entirely. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to be putting out a dub album anytime soon, you know?
That's a shame, I'm going to be honest, because dub's great. The Dub Side of the Moon, Easy Star All-Stars.
Yeah, I love that shit, yeah.
Killer band, man. Yeah. Fucking great band.
so anyways, your music. So, like, because it's, I listen to every song that you've released. That's nice. What I do.
Respect.
You had that playlist, which was very handy.
Nice. The ranked.
Yeah, the ranked playlist. I disagree with the order.
Shit, well, that's none of your business, dude. It's my playlist.
Yeah. I think Go to Bed was ranked too low. That was my big one.
Nice. Okay, I respect that. There's people out there that would fight you on that. They say it's ranked too high, you know. So.
Ranked too high, yeah. So where'd you get started? Let's hear about it.
Here's the other, the caveat is my parents actually are both musicians too.
Okay,
so
that's what I thought. I wrote that down, but I didn't want to like go out there because I heard it third hand, you know.
Oh yeah, exactly. And I appreciate you having some discretion with that information, you know, because some people, and here's the thing, man, I don't give a shit. I'm super happy that I'm from a musical family. That's awesome. But what's really convenient is when I was like maybe 20, 21, I didn't really want to talk about it because like, what if suddenly I blow up tomorrow and everyone's like, oh, it's just because he's got musical parents.
Yeah.
But luckily, I'm 25 and I've had a mediocre amount of success at best. So I think we can put to bed the idea that my family is helping me get anywhere with music, you know?
Yeah.
So it's all right. I'm happy. They're great parents. My dad was in this band called The Grapes of Wrath. My mom was in this killer band called Lavahaye. And, you know, just being around the music, they never really worked with me on any of my music. They were really good about that, like not wanting to fuck with
step
my
on
influences.
Your toes and influence and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, but just the fact that there was instruments around the house was like a huge leg up. So I really appreciate that.
So when did you have any projects before Mouth Breather or what?
Yeah. So you know, at high school, everyone's got like 40 bands in high school, right?
Yeah.
So I think the first band I had, this is great. My like two childhood friends, Sugi Henson and Ben Arney, their parents,
good names.
Ben's parents. Yeah, great names. These guys could be on Mad Men or something, like, which is a show I've been into right now. Great
show. Hell yeah.
But we started a band, and we didn't know, man, we were like nerds, man. We were fucking nerds. We were not listening to cool-ass music. We were listening to like Owl City. And by the way, that is cool-ass music now, but like,
sort of,
you know what? when you're in grade 9 and shit, you're like trying to get into Joy Division, even though your palate isn't actually sophisticated enough to enjoy it. You just listen to it because you want to look cool.
Yeah, that was me with hip hop in grade 9. I was like, you know what? I'm going to be a hip hop guy.
It's smart. I mean, I get it.
Stuck in the end, but, you know, I was initially, for sure.
It's interesting how so much of my life started as me just posing, and then eventually I started enjoying what I was doing, you know? And I think that's
fake it till you make it, brother, you know? Like,
no, it's true. Yeah, but anyways, so we started this band in grade 6 or 7 called Small Dogs at Large. Still maybe the best band name.
That's a great band name, yeah.
But quite quickly, there was sort of a big dramatic fallout that changed the course of how I play with musicians. There was a drummer involved. Great guy, Matty Troyer. Still talk to him. But there was sort of an impasse where the band, we wanted to pick a first cover song. And me and Sugi Hansen, more rock and roller guys, we wanted to play that song. We wanted to play, I think, some sort of, that song by Green Day and U2 that
they covered When the Saints Go Marching In Together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what we wanted to do. Now, yeah. Ben Arnie and Matty Troyer, love them to death, but they were completely hooked on doing Doo-Wah Diddy. You know that song, Doo-Wah Diddy? You know, here she comes just walking down the street singing Doo-Wah Diddy.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
You know, I wasn't the coolest guy around in grade 6, for sure. But that was, like, extremely uncool. Like, and I bless him to death. Now, in retrospect, I would love to cover Doo-Wah Diddy. As an adult man, I get it. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
But as a 6th grader, I'm like, I'm not ever going to get a girlfriend if the first song we play is Doo-Wah Diddy. And so there's a theme sort of going from that point forward where I don't necessarily collaborate that well with other artists. And most of that comes, not artists, but people in a band, you know?
Yeah, I've never succeeded with that either. Never.
It's just easier to do it on your own. And it doesn't come from a place of like me having a headlock with them. It's more so that I just feel so lazy that I don't want to expel the energy in order to remedy those situations.
Well, and to if you rely on spontaneity, it's very difficult to do that in a band structure, you know?
Yeah,
without perfect, beautiful harmony and or a lot of essentially like self-counseling with one another, right?
I don't even get how that works. For a long time, I thought the Beatles was a conspiracy because it's like, how do those four guys get along and write so well together? Like,
yeah, it makes crazy. No sense. The reality is they didn't write together, you know?
Well, there you go. That was the answer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was basically...
I can't believe they let Ringo have any songs, to be honest.
But did he? But he didn't have any songs. They weren't his songs.
He wrote Octopus's Garden.
No, he didn't.
He must have.
Yo, I got to look that up.
Yeah, look it up. Fact check me on that. I'm pretty sure it's got to be. It's so like, it sounds like what he looks like, you know?
What is that supposed to mean?
Ringo looks like a friendly British storyteller.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That song is a friendly British story.
He's the Beatle that the kids love.
He's Thomas the Tank Engine, man.
Fuck. You know, as much as I do... I was going to say something controversial about how I thought Dustin Hoffman did a better job at Thomas the Tank Engine, but it's not
true. Did Dustin Hoffman actually even do Thomas the Tank Engine?
He did a couple seasons after Ringo bowed out, I guess.
Wasn't it Alec Baldwin? Or did they all do it?
You know what? You might have a point there, but I do know that Dustin Hoffman did it for... And this is where shit gets crazy, actually, because you know the movie The Point by Harry Nilsson?
Yes, I do. I do quite well. So
I don't know. Don't quote me on this, but there's something here. Ringo does the original narration, but Dustin Hoffman does like the American narration.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
So they're always like up on each other's shit, apparently, in the narrator game. I don't get that.
I don't know either. I guess they both have this friendliness about their voices, although I think Ringo is inherently more friendly because Dustin Hoffman is kind of, he's that guy that seems pretty like almost stoic and then breaks loose. You look at Tootsie, you look at Straw Dogs, Graduate.
And a great way to sort of describe why Ringo is the more friendly, cuddly one is, have you seen Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium?
Not in a long time, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember it that well because, I was a child, but I do remember that it kind of fell flat on its face. And I don't think he's usually better at playing the more reserved character that breaks out. You're right.
Yeah, he's the kind of guy that like is reading and then, you know, that's kind of what I've always thought of Dustin.
That's a great way to put it. I agree with that completely.
Okay, but so you're in a band. They wanted to cover Doo-Wop Diddy. You thought it was uncool. Was it Small Dogs Live
Small
Large?
Small Dogs at Large.
At Large, that's a great band name.
Pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah, I mean, I guess that rather than, you know, going into the extreme history, basically every project up until grade 12 sort of settled the same way, you know, like a couple guys get together. I think one of them was called O Atticus, that was reference to To Kill a Mockingbird, great book. Yep. Couple other ones, you know, but just in general, we had a tune called Chicken Nuts and Cheese, which was kind of big in our local high school. We made
Ween-esque, it sounds.
Yeah.
Like. Yeah.
And I mean, the story goes later on. We'll get into that later, but at that point, Ween wasn't even on my radar, which is crazy. Okay.
Yeah.
Because it is, I feel like, anyway, we'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
But anyway, then in grade 11, I went to Indonesia for a year. So I took time off school, went, traveled there, lived with a family that had a reggae band called Pasukan Lima Jari, which was cool. They're like Muslim dudes, but they're in a reggae band. They smoke weed. And it was like a cool cultural tension. So I got to sit on a couple of those shows, learned to love reggae. Not that much, not a huge reggae fan, but you know, came back. And then that is when the cultural birth of like my music began. You know, I started a project called Lombok, which was essentially the exact precursor to Mouth Breather. It's like, it was digital ish. You know, there was like a lot of like dream pop. I was actually attacked online by a couple of strangers because it was so blatantly a Youth Lagoon ripoff album. Like, it was
I have that in my notes. You referenced Youth Lagoon in one of your early interviews.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that as a developing child, I kind of got hooked on singular influences like everyone does.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just tough when you're making that first record to not sound exactly like the influence that you have, you know?
100%. Yeah. Well, yeah, that happens all the time. You saw it here in Victoria a lot about 4 or 5 years ago with Matt DeMarco.
Yeah, Mac was big. Preoccupations too, I feel like, really brought a lot of, and that's fine.
And the women, I'd say more, the band. Yeah, for sure.
True.
The band.
Yeah, the band. And also the band. There's a lot of the band style bands.
Yeah, like, you know, that's true.
Yeah, that's a big thing. You know, actually, that's what's crazy about Victoria is there's like what I always found, and it might be different now, I haven't been there for a few years, is there was a very like pop centric folk scene and then a really like post punk centered alt scene. And there was like very few bands that actually sort of collided between those. Like they were really separate. I mean, Good Party, for instance, was like created as an antithesis to Rifflandia, like out of basically spite towards Rifflandia. And I think that's punk rock as fuck, but it is interesting how there was no like cultural exchange between those parties at all.
Yeah, except you.
Except me. And that's the next part of the story.
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah. Cause I think I opened for you one time at Good Party.
Yeah. Oh, that was in the Joe LaRue's apartment.
Yeah. I don't know. I was drinking so viciously during that period of my life that it's all kind of blurry, to be honest.
Yeah, man. I think that early 20s in Victoria, it's kind of a party, man. It's kind of a party.
Yeah.
Interesting to look back on, and sometimes you can't really recall what happened exactly. No. But I don't know. It's certainly. I think that having those experiences where it's like, oh shit, like I kind of partied pretty hard. If you have those, you can move forward in life and understand what that's like and, you know, grow from that. Whereas I'm not sure. I'm sure it's probably better to just be more or less teetotal your whole life. But you don't know what the consequences or like the what you're going to miss out on if you don't do it, you know? So
I never got in too much trouble. It fucked with my ego. That was the big thing.
I just got really out of shape, like really crazy unhealthy, you know?
Yeah, I'm still there, so.
Yeah, I'm just, this is like, COVID is my year to like, you know, I say as I'm drinking a fucking Molson Canadian, but it's Sunday, yeah. But it's definitely my year to try to like, you know, I'm eating kale, I'm cooking more, you know, like just trying to figure that shit out.
Yeah. All right, let's get back on this timeline here, man.
Mm-hmm.
So we're at just before Mouth Breather. I believe we're at like late 2013 is what it sounded like.
Exactly.
How old are you? You're the same age as me, I think. 94?
I'm 25, yeah. So I'm 95.
Yeah, me too. Okay, cool.
Okay, nice. Real recognize real, man.
Yeah, hell yeah. You're the pig.
You're the pig. Actually, yeah. I went to like this hippie-ass middle school or like elementary school, and I was so offended being called Year of the Pig that I found out a loophole that apparently the year that
starts
I was
in February.
Born. Yeah, starts in February, and I was born February 1st.
Oh, nice.
So
okay.
I was Year of the Dog.
You are Year of the Dog.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. It felt so good to flaunt that to everyone else in my class. Like, you pigs. I am not one of you.
Yeah.
I've kind of been a shithead in that regard for.
Yeah, we're delicious though, man. Pork belly is one of the best cuts of meat out there, in my personal opinion. You know? So.
Yeah, that's a.
I'm not eating dog anytime soon.
That's the thing, is I don't really have a point of reference there. I've eaten pig for sure. Yeah. So anyway, okay. So 2013, Dulambok, played Rifflandia. That was my first Rifflandia. I was still in high school. I got to go play Rifflandia. It was a big like, oh my god, my dreams are coming true sort of phenomenon.
Yeah.
And then pretty quickly I was disenchanted by it because I did kind of see myself as a fraud, you know, like it's just a complete ripoff record. Like it's not that interesting. So at that point, my brother, my younger brother is 2 years younger than me. He was like in grade 11 and he was having like an insane like period of creativity in his life. Like he was just crushing records. He had been the year before, he was like in CBC's top 20 under 25. Like he almost won this competition for folk music. And I was like, bro, like I'll produce you. I'll play bass for you. Like maybe we can do some songs together.
Yeah.
And so we made a band called Brothers and we did that for like 6 or 7 months.
That's when I first met you. I remember that. I thought that was you.
Yeah.
I remember that well. Yeah. It was hilarious because you're like, dude, I'm in a band with my brother called Brothers. And I was like, fuck yeah. That's so funny.
Just keep it on the nose, you know, keep it on the nose.
I loved it.
I'll admit that like if I'm struggling with mouth breather people right now with other people named mouth breather, Brothers was a shit thing to name your band. You know,
oh, for sure,
you go on Bandcamp, there's a million bands called Brothers already.
Yeah.
So, you know, the one difference though is none of them are even remotely famous. So we still could have kind of popped off there, but you know, things happen. We did a couple songs. We had a great time. And then Shane went to do, you know, his backpacking journey. Because, you know, when I was out of high school, I went backpacking. He had to do his rite of passage.
That's what you do.
Exactly. Yeah. But in that time, I got antsy. And so that's when I made the first mouth breather single, Shrug.
That was a big hit, man.
And that's when everything changed. I had done an EP the year before called Mouth Breather, just on Bandcamp. But my first official like release of music was Shrug.
You had a music video. It was on streaming.
Fort Langley, Will Wilkinson for Fort Langley crushed that. And
yeah, he's great. I'd like to talk to him at some point, I think. That'd be cool.
Yeah, you should. You should talk to both those boys. They're incredible, man. I mean, their impact on the local scene in terms of like, I don't know. I mean, there's one other guy that's doing really well from self-making music, Shiraz, or music videos. You know Shiraz?
No, I don't.
He just did the videos for Baby No Money, like all those new Baby No Money vids. And local drag queen Jimbo the Clown is in those videos.
Is Baby No Money is like, is that like Post Malone kind of thing? Or is that someone else I'm thinking of?
I think it's someone else you're thinking of. He popped off on TikTok last year with like, when I dropped off,
I know that one. Yeah. So that is what I'm thinking of. That is what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Well, you're really going to equate that to Post Malone?
I don't know. I listened to it once. My buddy in Vancouver showed it to me like a while ago. And I was like, I was pretty drunk and was like, yeah, it's Post Malone.
Yeah, that's a little rude, I'm going to be honest. Yeah. But at the same time, yeah, there's like 5 white rappers. So, I mean, he's either going to sound like Russ or he's going to sound like Post Malone. So,
yeah.
I get it. But anyway, so Shiraz is doing shit. I'm just putting that out there as like a, you know, caveat. Like, I know that there's other people making great music videos in Victoria.
Yeah.
But Fort Langley, those guys are just crazy, man.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I watched the Shrug video this afternoon and I was like, damn.
It's a great video. It's funny though, because Will...
You look older now, honestly, though. You look older. I'll tell you.
I appreciate that. Christ almighty, man.
You look really young in that video.
And I was trying my hardest not to. In fact, some of the comments are so bad. I have like this prepubescent, like sort of goatee going on in that video. There's like 4 or 5 comments in the video being like, bro, great music, but shave your fucking face. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So brutal. I mean, what I got going on right now, I mean, the audio no one's going to see, but for some reason, I am 25 years old and this is my Movember, man. It's not working out very well.
I'm worse than you. Don't worry about it.
Respect, dude. Respect. Hey, that's not bad. I mean, what is that, like 2 weeks?
Yeah, a little bit less, but yeah.
I am on your train, man. I understand. The worst part is, going back to my younger brother, this guy can grow like a Viking beard. It's insane.
Same with my brother, man. My brother is like full on like fucking, he looks like he could be in a biker gang. You know
what the hell? It's like they took all the like the
testosterone from us.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sitting around on my ass just playing Valorant all day, and my brother's out there with a huge beard, like tending bar, crushing it.
Exactly. Yeah, my brother works for the city.
No shit, dude.
Yeah. Ugh.
Well, it's all right.
Dishwasher, man.
Yeah, but you're also a legendary podcaster, JP versus the world.
Let's go.
On social media.
Yeah. Okay. So then you get to Mouth Breather. The Shrug takes off. And you start playing a lot of shows. I saw you play at least five times, not even on purpose, you know, like.
Yeah, I was just around, man. Yeah. I was just around. It was nice, though, because, man, my big thing, and this is kind of the consequence, when my Netflix story about my life comes out, it's going to be basically the battle between my creativity and my insane laziness. Like, I might be the laziest guy in the entire world. It's insane. Yeah. But, like, luckily, it was, like, the first time, like, Spotify was just starting, so I guess no one had really seen something like that happen, where just organically a song blew up like that. And so a lot of people were just offering me shows. Like, Holy Smokes just went off and gave me a whole bunch of shit.
Yeah, I forgot about Holy Smokes.
I miss those guys, man. Rip Holy Smokes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should get some of those people on. They're good people. I would like
to. They are good people. What was that guy's name? Colby, right? Was that his name?
Colby Carruthers, man.
I like that guy, man. That guy was fucking cool.
Yeah, man. He's still in Victoria. I was playing Grand Theft Auto with him like a few months ago.
Oh, cool. Nice. Yeah.
I think, man, COVID has really fucked people up, though. It's crazy. It sucks, especially if you're in the service industry. It's like, what the hell?
I've been laid off twice.
Dude, rip. I am sorry. I decided to go back to school right before this, so I've been really lucky.
So did I. Yeah. Yeah. I'm doing it all. It's out of control.
It's not bad. I mean, it's the best thing to do with all this free time.
Yeah, man.
But anyway.
It's easier online. I swear to God, it's easier online.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude, I agree. And the thing is, I wake up 2 minutes before class.
Yeah, same. I do it in bed, like, stark naked all the time. Yeah.
I was doing that, but I'm doing like this physics course right now, man. And I just fall asleep as soon as somebody talks about physics if I'm lying in bed still.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's dangerous. Like, I'm way behind. So I gotta make sure I get up.
I'm in a performance art class. So I wake up like, and I'm like, fuck it. If I have to turn my camera on, it's a performance.
Yeah. That's actually genius, dude. Yeah. I feel like you're probably sitting there being like, somebody tell me to put my fucking camera on. I am waiting, dude.
Yeah. This is amazing. I'm not actually doing that, but yeah.
Well, I'm not saying like you're the guy from The Guardian or whatever who jacked off on camera. Like that shit's crazy.
That shit was wild. Yeah, I'm just like, boomers are stupid. Sorry, boomers.
I don't understand how, like,
so easy to not do that.
Just jack off in the other, like, just stand away from the camera at least.
Or just wait, dude.
But if you have to, don't do it on camera.
Don't do it on camera, man. Jesus. Yeah.
No, that guy's an idiot. Apparently he's actually like much more of a dirtbag than that. And he posted this idiot Twitter yesterday and was like, oh, I can't believe I'm getting fired after like being such a loyal employee. And everyone's just like ragging on him. Like, what is your fucking problem, dude? Just leave. Like, shut up and go away. You fucked up.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. You're not fucking Megyn Kelly, man. Like, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not everyone gets to be Megyn Kelly, bro.
Yeah.
Just the way it is. But what were we talking about here?
Early success in Victoria.
So the thing is, basically, this is where my haunted past of not working with bands that great comes in, you know, because I was surrounded by fucking awesome people who loved the shit out of me and they just wanted to play my music. And that is like such a treat. Like, how often does that happen? That's crazy. But I was still a lazy piece of shit who hated confrontation. So basically, I just had to handpick like four people that I could trust wouldn't go too off on their own and just kind of follow the vision, because I knew I would never be able to tell them to like reel it in, because I can't do that. And then the other thing is, people always say I'm really funny on stage. Like, oh my God, you're so funny. Like, I'm more there for your funniness than the music. What that means though is that the music's not very put together live. And also I'm just fucked up drunk. Like, that just ended up being what the case was. It's like I would just get wasted, the band would be decent, and I would just say dumb shit on stage and people were like, oh my God, he's so hilarious, but the music is like so second fiddle to just the spectacle of a dumbass walking around on stage, you know?
Yeah.
So that burned out for me pretty quickly and wasn't that exciting after a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good classic, like, ego conflict. That's sort of a theme I'm kind of obsessed with, where it's like, damn, they like me live, but I'm not sure they like the music, you know?
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah,
that was like, kind of the thing with the schoolgirl thing that we did for a while, where I was like, is this, are people, I don't know, like, I don't even know if people are cringing anymore, like, or what. Like, I don't know where the line of artistry is here anymore. I lost sight of it.
But what did you want from Schoolgirl? Because I thought that the music was inherently spectacle, you know? Like,
I don't know what I wanted. I don't know what it was. Yeah, I just thought it was fun. And it was kind of like a great way to never be nervous again, more than anything for me.
That's a really good way to put it, actually. I did sound for you guys at one of the Halloween shows.
I remember that.
Yeah. That was a crazy fucking night, man. You guys were hardcore. Did one of you have like a vuvuzela put inside of a saxophone or something like that?
I did that at one point, yeah.
That is so badass, dude. Yeah, you guys were sick.
It didn't actually work. But.
But again, I mean, maybe that was me looking at it more from the spectacle side. It looked amazing. And so, I don't know. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Anyways, you, not me.
But you, man. You're a great guy. Great guy. Talented artist, by the way.
Thanks.
But yeah, basically that burned out. I kind of got bored. And also just like, I feel like my mom was kind of like moving to, she was buying a place in Montreal, and I'm like, I want to check out Montreal. So I went and checked that out. And also, dude, this is the best part. This is the best part. I am the perfect example of like, oh, you're going to move to Montreal and you think you're going to be famous.
That's a meme. I made a song about that specifically.
Dude, I am that meme, bro. It is brutal, dude. It is so funny. I literally thought, my stupid ass, I'm like, hey, I'm popping off pretty decently in Victoria. Like, this should be, you know, maybe I should see if I can go somewhere bigger. So if the momentum continues, it can be like a bigger thing, right?
Yeah.
Holy crow, was I was so stupid, man.
Yeah. It's the moving to LA of here, of Canada, right?
Oh, it's insane. It is so
insane. Toronto's
a
better move too, in my opinion. It's easier to find a niche there, I think.
I 100% agree. And it turns out one of the big reasons why is because the metrics don't really add up in Montreal. They say there's over 1 million people there, but how many of those are actually Anglophones? Like, that community is probably the same size as Victoria.
Yeah. 300,000 so people or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. It really limits, like, it's not actually a big city if you're playing English music at the like five English bars that are left there, you know? But the very first, okay. So I get there and I hook up with a high school friend who's in a band called Hot Milk. And I was listening to some of their demos. I'm like, this is sexy. This is groovy. Like, let's chill. And he had been keeping track of the fact that I was having a successful year, you know?
Yeah.
So he hooks me up with like his singer is like a local, you know, person about town, you know, doing good shit. Knows how to tap some shit. Right. Yeah. So they're like, let's do Hot Milk and Mouth Breather, and then Vanille, another local band who are amazing, by the way. And I feel so horrible for dragging them into what happens next. But basically, there was a lot of miscommunication. We rented out the entire top floor of Cafe Cleo, like this strip club. And we were like, oh, we're going to get 200-300 fucking people in here, man. Like, no problem. Easy. But I guess they thought that I was like mad famous, and I think I thought I was more popular than I was. So they were hedging like all their bets on me filling that fucking room, man. My first show in Montreal. We had to, as soon as the set was over, we had to grab our shit and run because we couldn't afford to pay the guys the fucking venue money.
Yeah.
Because there was like four people there, dude.
Damn.
It was insane. And we figured, I'm pretty sure we figured it out later. Like, I wasn't in charge of the finances. I don't want to come off like a dirtbag here in that regard, but there was some serious panicking happening because we thought our expectations were so off, man. It was crazy. Shit got better over time, but that was like the moment where it really humbled me. And I think ever since then, I've been focusing more on just making music I like than trying to like be the next fucking Mac DeMarco.
Yeah.
It was definitely a great experience to have. Not at the time. But holy shit, man, that puts you in a place.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet, man. I think a lot about that I talked to Zane. I don't know if you know Zane. I talked to him.
Yeah.
He's a really good dude. About how, and it's different for everybody, but the necessary, should you want to really pursue doing something artful, how necessary it is to be audience conscious, right?
Oh, yeah.
So if your audience responds well to something, and you don't want to do it anymore, that sound or that type of thing, what do you do? Right.
God.
And the reality is you should probably meet in the middle.
Yeah, exactly.
Cause that's how you don't be a sellout, but you also, continue to, you know, pay the bills or whatever it is. Right. And have your ego drug satisfied. But like also fuck that, like do whatever you want. I don't know. It's such a hard beast to think about the audience. Like I think about that even doing this podcast, like who do I talk to? Do I talk to people I want to talk to? Do I make it about Victoria? I don't know. I just ask people to talk and see what happens, you know?
I really, yeah. I mean, I like your philosophy for the podcast. We'll start with there first because it's like, I've been, man, I just love talking, man. I just talk like a motherfucker.
I thought you did too. I was like, I got to talk to fucking Owen. I know this guy. Because I haven't properly talked to you that much and I knew you'd be a good chat, so.
Totally. And I'm glad you had me on. But it is funny how it's like, I don't know how long you've been thinking about making this podcast before you pulled the trigger.
A year.
But definitely for me, it's always been something where in the back of my mind, it's like, oh, it'd be cool to make a podcast. But yeah. Like, what do you do it about? Like, what's the theme, you know? And the fact that you actually, what you're kind of approaching it where you do have like a sort of a borderline niche, even just the name JP Versus, like, and then you can do per episode. That's a great start.
That was a panic name, but yeah.
Yeah, but it works. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, I think that you're doing it better where it's like, who cares? We don't need to figure out what the show's about until maybe 25 episodes down when we're starting to form a pattern, you know?
So I appreciate that. You just got to keep doing it. But yeah, so anyways, how has your relationship with an audience kind of changed over the last, I guess, 5-6 years?
I think that I'm definitely more and more realizing that. And when I moved to Toronto, sort of things bounced back and people here really support live music and I've been having a lot of great shows. But the bottom line always tends to be that I still don't really have the will to practice a lot. And so the live show is always a little sloppy, but people really dig it because I'm just kind of a fucking weird guy, you know? Yeah. And so I've started to sort of take that into account and realize that I don't, you know, I've tried chasing the dragon of success on Spotify to, you know, mixed results. So it doesn't
really
matter.
Have you done the SubmitHub thing? I wanted to ask you that. I feel like now's a good time to ask you that.
I tried once. That type of shit? I have management that deal with all my like streaming stuff.
Oh, you got management. Okay.
Yeah. Good man. You know, they're low key. Classics Management in Vancouver. You know, they talk to Sony, all that shit. It's not like I'm making $1 million, but it's nice to have somebody else take care of that for me.
Yeah.
You know.
It makes sure the people that would want to listen to it at least know it's there, right?
Well, that's
huge. Which is very important. I struggle with that one too.
Well, and the other big thing that I found out once I had representation is that, like, you make your money from, what's crazy is you make so much money from satellite radio. On satellite radio is apparently like, dude, these payouts are just ridiculous for like 2 or 3 plays on satellite radio. So they just find like the loopholes to make it somewhat lucrative to work on this shit. But it's not by any means like, oh, I'm going to blow up now that I got fucking people on my side, you know? But I guess my point with all that is that I know now that I can basically just walk up on stage with a tambourine and scream and people are going to be like, that was a groovy show, man. Like, that's really cool. So I can kind of just focus on making music I like, because at the end of the day, what people want to see from me when they do see me live is just me being kind of a nut. And I can do that. I'll never not be a weird dude. So
yeah. That's good.
Yeah. It's working.
Yeah. So you interned with Tegan and Sarah. What was that all about?
Yeah, so that was like, I guess it's a pretty formative experience. Right when Shane and I made Brothers, we got like Zone Band of the Month, right? Which was like,
Zane got Zone Band of the Month too when I was talking to him.
It feels badass. I mean, it's like, you know, I don't harbor any ill will against the Zone, but I'll tell you what, there was like a crazy line I had to walk when I was going to UVic trying to get into this really cool, like, Victoria has a sick underground scene, and I had to just shut my fucking mouth about the Zone Band of the Month, because that's like the least street cred thing you can fucking have, man.
That's correct. Yeah.
So it was a weird like tightrope walk in my first few months living in Victoria, but it did lead me to talking to the managers of Tegan and Sarah about Brothers, because they're like, oh, well, we know how to manage sibling acts, right? Like, maybe these guys would be sick. So that's how I got my foot in the door. But then me and my friend Gordon were running this like little label, Jam Room Records. And
yeah, that's where a lot of the videos are on the YouTube and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's sort of our home base for a lot of content. I'm on like a Sony subsidiary now, so I have to put my things on a different fucking channel. I thought, listen, if my managers are listening to this, you told me I could put them on the Jam Room channel, and now they're not. So this, I want to talk about that, but we'll talk about that another time.
Yeah.
But man, we grew that shit since like my brother and I started that channel when I was in grade like 12. When Gordy came along, I don't know if you've met Gordon, blonde guy, handsome fellow, but just
not off the top of my head, no.
Ball of energy. This guy bounces off the walls. And so we walked into their office with like a demo tape of our artists, and they were just like, damn, these guys have balls. So they just gave us internships, and we spent like a good couple months just hanging out with them. They would take us to like festivals and shit. Like, they, you know, I think they just wanted, it's tough with the music industry. There's not a lot of money going around. So people just kind of try to hold people. Like, let's keep these guys in our circle of influence in case anything good happens. And so at the end of the day, when things sort of didn't end up working out with that, like later on, I felt for a while like pretty bitter. Like I was like, ugh, fuckers, like I never got a deal. I never really got anything out of this, didn't get a job. But in reality, it's like, dude, that's just the way the industry works. It's my fault for wanting to be a part of like a pretty cutthroat thing. And I have nothing but respect for those guys. Like they've really worked hard to get where they are. So, you know, so put that on record.
Yeah. But you've been shooting for the moon, like out the gate though, I guess, eh? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Do you think like, and forgive me for this question, do you think that like were your parents like successful musicians?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. So do you think that you were like, well, fuck it, if they can do it, I can do it. Do you think that there is a bit of that, right?
It's interesting. I think my mother always imparted in me, like, never do music. Don't even touch music. Yeah. You're gonna get fucked over, you're gonna hate yourself. You're going to become a drunk. Like, it's just a bad fucking vibe. Because they
sounds
got
like
fucked
she was
over.
Half right, eh? Like,
yeah, exactly. No, but yeah, like, they got fucked over, man. Like, in the 80s, there was a lot of money going around. They didn't really get what they deserved. And then everything came crashing down with streaming. And, you know, she ended up just biting the bullet and getting a real job. And
yeah,
I thank her every day for it because, you know, she's putting me through college more or less right now. Well, we'll see. I'll have to talk to her about that. Student loans and all that shit.
Yeah.
But at the same time, so when I was given the opportunity, like when I hit like grade 12, they're like, you know what? We're so sorry for telling you to avoid music. If that's what you really want to do, you should do it. So I kind of gave it a college try for like the first 3 years that way. But then when I got an inkling of success, then I started comparing myself to like my dad in particular, who was quite well off in the 80s. You know, he was, you know, even now I'll meet people and they're like, oh, I loved your dad's band. He played the show I went to. And it's like, no, you should love my fucking band. You know, I don't want to hear about my dad's fucking band. You know, yeah. I love the guy to death, but like, there's
like Jeff Buckley, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I want to be Jeff. I don't even like, no one even knows who Tim Buckley is anymore. You know, I want to eclipse my father. So then, yeah, basically there was another follow-up 2 or 3 years where I was just like, if my dad can do it, I got to fucking try to at least put myself on the same page. But I think that now, like right now I'm back in school, I'm making video games. Like I'm in like video game development and shit like that. And
yeah, you're a big gamer, eh? Right? You're a gamer?
I'm a big gamer, man.
Yeah,
I mean,
I downloaded Undertale and played it for 10 minutes in preparation for this interview. Oh,
God, dude. That game, man. I mean, the thing is, if you play
for
1 more
really
hour...
Good. That's all I got out of it, but...
Dude, Toby Fox, that's a one-man project. He made the whole game. He made all the music, all the assets.
It's crazy.
That guy's a god, man.
Yeah. You ever played Journey? I also wanted to ask you. You ever played Journey? You play that one?
I like Journey, but I'm going to be honest, like, I'm a narrative guy. And that one
Journey blew my mind. It's what like it like made me cry like a baby and shit. Like geez. I was completely floored by it, man. Honestly,
you should play Abzu. Have you played Abzu?
No, it's on my list though. I have a screenshot of it on my phone right now.
It was free on the Epic Store last week. I should have hit you up. Sorry about that.
Damn, that's all right. I'm not a PC gamer except for I downloaded Undertale on my computer.
Nice respect. Yeah. Yo, what do you play on?
I play on PlayStation
4.
Four. Yeah.
How's the what's your vibe on the 5? You gonna cop one?
I'll get one in 2 years.
That's my vibe too, man. I'm not one of those guys. I had an argument with my friend last night about this. He's like, what would it take for you to line up in a line to get a game on like release day? And it's nothing. I don't care how good a game is. It's just a tedious amount of work, and you pay more. Like, why not wait? Like, I don't need to be the first guy to play a fucking game.
Yeah. I felt that way about Spider-Man, though. I did get Spider-Man right away when it came out.
The new one? The one with, like, the webs? Yeah, I heard it's good, but...
Yeah.
But, I mean, still, dude, you're wasting your time.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I'm just playing Persona 5, and I've been playing it for 4 months. That's where I'm at, so it's like...
Christ. And it's going to take another 2 years to finish that game,
right? It's such a fucking beast, but it's pretty sick. Yeah.
It's one of the best games ever, but I got to say, the narrative sequences can sometimes last so long.
It's so hard, yeah. And it's like... I need to play it for 3 hours in a row to make sense of it, and I don't often find the time to do that, you know?
But, dude, it is such a gorgeous game. Another great game with a great soundtrack, too. Really groovy.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, the music's fucking awesome. Anyways, let's get back to what were we talking about? Tegan and Sarah, family, I don't know.
I think my point with the gaming thing was that I think that more than anything, I just believe in the fact that you only live once. I believe that you only live once, but I just... And I know that it's kind of like...
You've been in Toronto too long, man.
Shut up.
YOLO.
I don't know. Maybe we don't. Like, actually, I'm not even going to... I'm an agnostic YOLOer. I'll say that much. But I do really prescribe to the idea that, like, I think that life after death is just, like, being leaving something to be remembered by, you know?
And the body of work, right?
Yeah,
that's,
exactly.
That's for the body of work, the canon. I know Prince, I'm pretty sure Prince was very obsessed with that.
And you know what? I think he did all right.
I think he did all right too, yeah. I think we might see the fruits of that over the next couple decades too still. I think they haven't even scratched the surface with unreleased Prince music from what I've gathered, so.
And also the stuff he's written for other people too, man. Like, Jesus Christ, yeah. That guy was prolific as hell.
Maniac, yeah.
He wrote Maniac?
Oh, yeah, yeah, he did.
Hell yeah.
Could I see Prince doing Maniac? Yeah, I could. I totally could.
I could see him do fucking anything, man.
Pretty much anything, yeah.
Yeah, it's insane. He could have done a Harlem Shake for all I know. Maybe that was like an early demo that he had.
He could have done music for airports.
Yeah. Yeah. He probably did. It's actually just a record of his that was accidentally slowed down. The tape machine. Ah, Prince. Rest in peace, man.
Okay. I got some weird questions for you if you want them.
Shoot, man.
So I watched the cinema video.
Nice.
You did an interview about it. You used the term kino, which I'm quite fond of. Big fan of the term kino. It's applicable to non-film often.
Right.
But you open the video with yourself superimposed as Obi-Wan Kenobi in episode 2, I believe.
Yeah, best episode.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to ask. Like, I want to hear... I got some boys that are big prequel boys, and I'd like to hear where you stand on all that.
Well, I think everyone was pretty happy when Kanye came out and said the prequels were his favorite.
Yeah, right. Dude, that was so lit, man. Yeah.
It was just like, dude, this guy, I understand he's going through some tough times and he is being a little reckless, especially politically. But the guy is still so self-aware in terms of how to be fucking hilarious. Like, he is so smart. He's so funny. And I think, if anything,
he's also a good person, I got to say. Like, there's something about Kanye when if you sit and listen to him talk long enough, you kind of realize, I'm like, this guy's intentions are good.
His heart is absolutely in the right place. I would never, ever say anything otherwise.
Narcissism, sure. But even then, like...
But his narcissism, like, his early interviews about, like, why can't you see a black man as God? Like, it's all from a place of, like, I've been put down my whole life saying, like, I shouldn't be who I am and that I should be humbled. And it's just, like, how can you call him a narcissist? I mean, it's fundamentally for, like, a good function, right? I don't know. Obviously, now he's extremely rich and, like, maybe he can cool it a little bit.
Yeah. But I mean, like, fame corrupts people. And the fact that he is still forthright is crazy, right? Like, you talked about, like, even the touch of fame, you know, or whatever, like, fucked with your head.
It ruined me, dude.
Yeah. thinking about the level of a Kanye West or something, and it just sounds like it would just completely melt your brain, man. Like, better, crazier than any drug addiction, crazier than anything. It just sounds so hard to stay ground, like, not even stay humble, but to stay like focused, even, right?
Well, yeah, and that's the big thing. Oh, are you there? Can you? Oh,
yeah, sorry, just glitched out. I think we're good now. We're good now. Check. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Because I'm about to go off. No, but I'm going to come back to the Star Wars thing. But I just want to say, like, a big point about what I really enjoy about Kanye and the Kardashians at large is, a lot of people are like, and I've always been like this too, like, oh, boo-hoo, your life sucks, you're rich. Like, you have to deal with, like, haters online. But at the end of the day, fundamentally, you're rich and you're famous. But, like, there's a new level of influencers that didn't exist, like, 20 or 30 years ago. So our models of, like, criticizing people based on privilege are also somewhat outdated. Like, I don't deny by any means that these rich influencers are totally, you know, pieces of shit, whining and complaining about nothing. But at the same time, Kim apparently posted this photo of her with an I voted sticker, but she was wearing a red dress, right? And the internet went fucking nuts. They're like, who the fuck did you vote for, Kim? You vote for Trump? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And this is something, and by the way, Kim is
she not... voted for Kanye, you could only imagine, right?
Well, you'd hope so. Kim also is probably smarter than that.
She probably voted for Biden, honestly.
Yeah, I think she definitely voted for Biden. I think that she's and I feel like she probably told Kanye straight up, like,
he probably didn't give a fuck, honestly.
He probably forgot, man. He's like, oh shit, right. I was in that election for a bit. I can't believe that I did that, dude. But I guess my point there is that, like, yo, she recently posted this bullshit about, like, her friends on a private island. Like,
yeah, that was dumb as fuck. That was dumb as fuck, man.
I don't disagree with that. But there is something to say about, there's a new level of people that are just so popular that all they do all day is receive extreme abuse from the internet, right? And people telling them that they should know better and all this shit. I don't think there's like two ways to look at it. One is like, I'm not saying leave them alone, but it's not doing any favors to them. But like, it is a completely new phenomenon to be that hated, like in this way, so rapidly and so intimately. But also, in the case of someone like Elon Musk, if anyone out there, and like, I don't really know where I stand with Elon Musk. I know a lot of my friends, most of my friends are pretty left-wing, and I'm left-wing too, but I don't know economically if it's like a good thing to just like complain about rich people all the time. Like, maybe there's other ways we can deal with that.
I don't think it does much.
Yeah, I don't think it does that much. But the thing is, the more you do, the more he just doesn't give a fuck. Like, the more you complain and you say, oh my God, you're rich, you're an asshole. You think he's going to suddenly take it more seriously? Like, yeah. No.
And I do think complaining about specific people too, I think we do live in like, there's a lot of smart people that talk about social capital, or as I'll call it now, attention economy.
Yeah. Right? Oh yeah.
So by complaining about X influencer, rich person, celebrity, whatever, by complaining about a specific person, you are giving them value in the attention economy, right?
That's why Trump won.
That's why Trump is where he's at. Exactly.
It's exactly.
We need to forget about him as quick as possible if we want to move on, basically.
And also, like,
or stop talking about him.
Yeah, that's the other thing with like the Bezos thing. Shut up about Bezos. Talk about the fundamental reasons behind why he's successful and attack those. Why would you give him more airtime?
I didn't know his name until about 2 years ago.
Yeah, and we shouldn't. He should just be some android, and we should. I mean, okay, here's the thing. I am definitely kind of out of line saying that, because it is good to bring attention to that. But I guess my point is, just attacking a dude, like attack the principles that allow him to thrive like that in an economy. That's the unjust part. Like, why are you going after him? Go after the fundamentals that allow him to be the way he is.
Yeah, I agree too. And when you look at specifically like a Bezos type, I think too, you have these CEOs, Elon Musk, Bezos types, and you know, potentially they have harmful policies in place that fuck over the bottom of the line workers that make these companies work or whatever. If you cut their heads off, they're fucking, these guys are hydras, man. There's another guy that will take their place in a second. You need to cut the infrastructure. It's the infrastructure. Everyone knows that though, in reality.
And by the way, everyone who tells, like, who says like, oh, karmically he should just be doing a better job, they're basically implying that it's better to just live under like benevolent capitalist rulers than to actually change government like rules on how people can do business. Like, isn't the reason why we have a government so that we can make laws as to how like a company can operate? Why are we asking businesses to somehow be like the gods of the future? Like, that puts a lot more dangerous power in their hands than just regulating them properly.
Yeah. Are you you're a Bernie Sanders guy, I take it? Would that be apt?
Not anymore, for sure. I mean, I'm hoping AOC runs at some point, but I think it's ridiculous that people even supported Bernie in the second run around, because it's like, old people, why are we still working with these fucking old people, dude? It's not inspiring. Like, there's a lot of young people that would like Bernie's platform, but are just so stuck in influencer culture that like, dude, AOC is going to crush. She's on Twitch all the time. Like, she's really making moves.
Yeah, I concur. Yeah.
That she is going to go. I mean, she's so young still, which is great. Like, she's got a lot of time, but we need more people like that, and less people like Bernie Sanders, who are like, basically they've been around since the Soviet Union was fucking invented.
yeah, that's like legitimately. Yeah. My friend Ned Taylor, who I had on here too, said a similar thing, but you know, he's a politician, so he can't quite go there. But
right.
He's a big proprietor of. He thinks it's insane, essentially, that we don't have more youth involved in politics, and that we're kind of, you know, it's just people. Just grabbing onto the last vestiges of power as their generation dies out, and they are just not looking out for the future, right? And I'm sure that we've been saying this forever, but it seems more feasible now, because the platforms that these people are using to get attention are like our battlegrounds. Like, we get it much better than they ever could, right?
But I mean, the fact of the matter is, the boomer generation is the most consequential generation of all time, the largest by every means. And that's the reason Joe Biden is now going to be the oldest elected president of all time. Boomers still 100% control the power structure. And that is fucked. I'm sorry, man, but that's fucked.
Yeah. It is fucked.
But then again, as somebody who's like, I'm not interested at all in technocracy. I'm not interested in at all disestablishing democracy. I understand and completely agree with the right to vote. So it's not like I'm going to say like people over 80 shouldn't be able to vote. But like there is something that, as much as you can bring the young people out, like the single largest generation of people was like the boomers, right? Like that was a huge expansion of the populace.
And it's in the name.
Yeah, exactly. They boomed. So yeah. It's like, no matter what we do, like the ramifications of their actions will be here while they're still around. And I don't wish any ill will on boomers. I mean, so many of my family are boomers, but it is just like, we kind of have to look at it pragmatically and be like, man, yeah we're going to deal with old people in government, like the oldest people ever, while this generation is still holding the reins of power.
Yeah. It's absurd. It's a little absurd.
So that's just
yeah. Speaking of political theory, the prequels, man. Talk to me about the prequels. That's my one buddy. One of my buddies is like very obsessed that the prequels are the greatest trilogy of a political thriller ever. Specifically, the second and third film. Yeah. They're almost like a political opera of sorts that Aaron Sorkin couldn't even imagine making. You know.
And yeah, I 100% agree with that. It doesn't necessarily make them well put together films. So.
Yeah.
I mean, the they would have been really.
Stuff looks weird. That's my one kind of big.
Yeah. The thing is, and the it's just kind of cool to see somebody like George. I mean, with the first movies, he was taking a lot of like Kurosawa. He was like biting a lot of stuff, right? And it was a very simple space opera. What he should have done, and I wish he had learned how to write books, is he should have George R.R. Martin the prequels. And then, because he had so much politics, so many, like there's so many different characters interplaying with each other, that it doesn't work in the format of three, like 2-hour movies. It should have been a book that was adapted into some sort of HBO show, you know, that would have been amazing, you know? Because, it's so dense with, like, really cool political shit. And, I mean, pod racing is in there, too. The midichlorians. There's a lot of cool stuff.
The midichlorians are hilarious, man. Yeah, I was talking to somebody about that the other day.
they just really threw the book in there. It's like, this is going to be my final, like, magnum opus or whatever. And, fundamentally, there's a lot of good bones on that body, but the skeleton is only like, maybe it was assembled upside down or something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's a good metaphor.
I'll take that.
Hell yeah. I got more shit for you. Mm-hmm. So I listen. Yeah, as I said, I listen to all of the music available on Spotify. And I dug into some of your interviews. You got compared to Beck and Cake. One of these articles.
Wait. Can I get the name of that publication just for?
No, I didn't write it down.
Asshole.
Yeah, I thought that was a weird one. Honestly, I thought it was a bit lazy. Beck, I can get, but Cake, no.
Well, that's the thing, man. I'm totally on board with the Beck thing, and I don't mean any ill will to Cake, but fuck off with the Cake.
That's age. That's like, yeah, they haven't aged very well. But Beck's got that kind of eclectic sound. The hip hop influence is there as well as you have.
Yeah, I kind of get that one.
Humor, but
kind of I'm like, funnier than Beck, bro.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, you haven't written your sea changes yet, you know.
Fuck, man, I'm working on it right now, actually.
I hope so. Yeah, your newest release is Sadder. I wrote that down too. I just listened to that this morning.
Yeah, and it's just gonna get worse. Don't worry.
Okay, I'm down, dude. but the kind of through thread I found was not Weezer specifically, but Rivers Cuomo. You know?
Okay. I feel
that. And this kind of like, you have this, like, it feels like you're chasing, like a pop sensation. You know what I mean? Like the Rivers always talks about that in recent decades, where he talks about how he's like, I want to write the world's greatest pop song.
Yeah.
And I want to do that. And, I feel like there's a lot of that, like, cause you have some of these big stadium guitar solos and these, like, you know, the Beach Boys influence, like kind of used tastefully. Which Rivers does, especially in the later Weezer. I'm a fan of all Weezer, to be clear. I'm not a hater of the later stuff. Like,
I really got to check out the newer stuff, man. It's been off my radar for a few reasons.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's more like a guy exploring songwriting than it is a guy trying to write something like personal. Right, you know what I mean? Right. It's like it's almost experimental, like in the truest sense of the word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, yeah. I guess he's got free reign now. It's like, bro, you do you. You're a celebrity.
Sure.
Toto covered your shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's just so whack, honestly. That album sucked. I got to tell you, Rivers.
Oh, it was awful, dude.
The whole cover. He did a whole covers album. So bad.
That whole exchange was just awful. I don't want any more Toto limelight than I like. It's just garbage, man. It's like Journey's, like, Don't Stop Believing. Like,
I like Toto.
Shut the fuck up.
I like Toto.
That's fine. I respect your opinion, but you're wrong.
They were the backing band for Thriller. Did you know that?
I feel like I've heard of that, but that's crazy.
Yeah.
So they've done one good thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy, dude.
Yeah. Dude, hell yeah. Okay. You seen any good movies lately? You watch anything good?
Oh, shit. Yo, I fucking have. Wait. Fuck, dude. I kind of want to, like, go through my... Okay, you know what? Never mind. Hold on. I watched The Queen's Gambit the other day.
Yeah, so did I.
God,
yeah,
that's a good one, man.
It was good. It's like, it's just so comfy and entertaining. I didn't think it was particularly intelligent, to be honest.
But Kasparov and, like, all these grandmasters made all the... Like, the games are actually really
good. The games
good
are good. Yeah, yeah, I looked into that. But it reminded me of, like, a shonen anime, you know?
Interesting. Like, oh, where like, it was like, just like, Hikaru No Go?
Yeah, or like, yeah, yeah. Or even, like, Naruto, man. But
that's fair.
Hikaru No Go is a very good reference. Nice, man.
Mm-hmm. God, I fucking love that show. I read it in Shonen Jump. I've never seen the anime, though.
Yeah, I never have either. I did. Yeah, I was a big Shonen Jump boy. But that's funny, man. But yeah, like, she just wins everything. Like, she's unbeatable.
Yeah, she's clear. Yeah, I mean, that's actually a good point, man.
That's the anime thing where it's like Goku never loses. Naruto ultimately never loses. Right?
But it's good as a limited series because she still does lose to Karpov, like, twice. And she loses to Benny. And, God, Benny is just a cutie, man. That's a great character. Mm-hmm. His stupid hat, like, oh my God, man, that was super good. Oh wait,
but yeah, it did make me immediately like download a chess app and be like, you know,
yeah,
like every other person that watched it, right?
And get destroyed. Hey,
no,
I'm playing online.
I did pretty good.
Are you fucking serious?
I'm pretty
good. Playing online?
Yeah, I'm pretty good.
Dude,
I
cannot get any of the openings properly, and I leave my shit way open. It's crazy. I'll be playing guys who are like 700. And it's like four moves and I'm done. It's crazy. I don't know how I could be this bad. Like, you have to intentionally.
I watched one YouTube video and I was like, I'm doing what this guy says.
And I just there was that thing. I guess, were you around on Twitch when they did the big, like, chess was huge on Twitch a few months ago?
No, I didn't know about that. I'm not a Twitch guy.
Why? What's wrong with you?
I don't know. I just never got into it. I don't know.
I don't know, man. I think there's definitely, like, especially with COVID, like, the parasocial relationships are, like, becoming more and more like almost necessary. Like, I've had nights where I'm just sitting here drinking a beer and it's like, I'm just gonna watch some random dude play Dark Souls. Like, well, not Dark Souls. If I say Dark Souls in the podcast, a friend of mine's gonna call me out because I fucking hate Dark Souls.
Yeah,
but you know,
yeah,
like,
I don't like it either.
Yeah, but and too he hard. Does yeah, it's way too hard, dude. I just want to shoot shit or like run around.
Yeah,
I guess a better example would be like smash.
Hell yeah. Yeah, I'm a big Smash guy.
Huge. I actually, the only Smash tournament I ever played in was at that video game store in Quadra Village.
Epic Games. Yeah.
Man, I got 15th out of 16. Benny, you my friend, someone. Got, yeah, he was the only one that got lower than me, I think.
Right.
So. Yeah. It's crazy because that's like what I really dig about Smash too is like you think that you are good, like you're the best friend of your friends, and you go to play any competitive tournament and you just get smacked, man.
It's smacked. Yeah, I play online sometimes. I have a Switch as well. I play online sometimes and it's just like you don't win. You just don't win. There's no way.
It's these guys are so good, and it's a game for children, by the way, so relax.
Yeah,
people.
Yeah,
Jesus. But yeah. What was I saying about that? Yeah, Twitch is good. I don't know, I definitely came into it thinking it was kind of like super dorky, but I'm also kind of a dork, so I can't really can't really deny that.
I can get behind it. Like, I was for a long time, like, very much like, Jesus, what the fuck are people doing watching people play video games? But then you kind of think about it a little more, and it's like, same as watching people play golf.
Yeah.
It is.
It's actually much more interesting to me than people
play golf. Yeah, me too. Yeah. So. I like the speed runs. I watch, like, speed run compilations and shit when I'm hungover. That's kind of my, like, comfort zone.
You know? I respect that. I'm not a huge fan of like the entertainment streamers, but I'll watch like Valorant tournaments. Like, I love tournaments, like days, you know, just like any other sports. Like, I like basketball and I like Fortnite tournaments.
Yeah. You pick someone to root for and send it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's never Tfue. Fuck Tfue.
I don't know what that means, man.
Yeah, well, some of your listeners will get it and they're going to be like, dude, that guy Owen. Man, respect, dude. That is so true. Fuck Tfue.
Yeah, fuck Tfue. Sure. Something I also wanted to ask you actually was, do you have any, you know, you're an internet guy. That's apparent to me. You're definitely like very internet aware, meme aware, if you will. Yeah, me too. For sure. You ever worry about like irony poisoning? This is a term I've come across over the years.
Interesting.
Being sort of poisoned by irony, being like just thinking everything's bullshit and like, yeah. Do you, right. Is that something that concerns you?
No, what concerns kind of me.
Dripping into your real personality and real life and stuff and being.
I think that a lot of people think that irony is nihilism. And I don't think that's necessarily one-to-one. I think irony can actually be used to really help a lot of people's self-confidence and not take things seriously that might otherwise hurt their feelings. And so for me, at least, I'm a very positive, ironic person. Like any sort of irony that I do throw out there, any is the wrong word. All the irony, because I toss it out left, right, and center. I'm sort of post-postmodernist, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do. I always use Lil B as my example of post-postmodernism always. Lil B.
Oh, yeah. Maybe the architect of the movement, I'd say, you know, he's a genius. Yeah. But yeah, for me, I think there's a lot of good things that can come out of just being a little bit like nothing really matters. But then again, I was specifically trying to say that it's not inherently nihilistic. I guess what I'm trying to really imply is that sometimes it's really good to not give a shit, you know, like there's a lot of things that it's better, especially with the internet, when everyone's so focused on their fucking looks and whether or not they have enough likes on their photo. And all this garbage, it's really good to have a personality where it's like, I don't fucking care, you know? Yeah. I don't fucking care. And so, yeah, that being said, I think what you're kind of implying is irony poisoning can sort of seep into, like, issues that matter. Like, maybe people who are super ironic don't really care about voting as much because it's like, what's the point?
For sure. And, that is exactly what I'm getting at, yeah.
Yeah, and...
Maybe not voting specifically. Like, you should definitely vote, honestly. Like, I think...
Yeah.
You should definitely vote. There's no question about that, but...
Vote or die. I loved that, man. They should bring back that campaign. That was fucking hilarious.
Vote or die? Who did vote or die?
I think it was P. Diddy, like 2004, the John Kerry election, I think.
He did. Oh, hell yeah. That's funny.
Insane, dude. Just like the what are kids like? They like gangster rap.
Yeah.
Vote or die, dude. So,
yeah.
I might actually be mixing that up with the South Park episode that parodied the election, but yeah, something was going on there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I guess to answer your point, it's like, don't, you know, there's things that are worth taking seriously in life, but try to maybe examine those things on an individual basis and at a base level, always don't take anything seriously. But when something comes across your radar that seems serious, take it seriously rather than the other way around where it's like you take everything seriously, but you learn to let things slide. No, you should let everything slide, but know when to take something seriously because you're going to feel a lot healthier and a lot happier if things are just kind of sliding off your shoulders, you know?
Yeah. So what you're saying is essentially just trust your gut, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you should always be developing your gut. That's something I think about. Like, you know, you shouldn't ever become less empathetic. You should always work on becoming more empathetic.
I don't know if irony necessarily has anything to do with empathy though. Does
I
it?
I think it does. I think it does fundamentally. Why? Yeah. Why? Well, because it's like, you know, like, I wish I had a banger example off the top of my head. I don't. But, you know, let's say somebody is like, I don't know, you're trying to console like a friend or a partner or something about something that you really don't think matters.
Right.
But you know it matters to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you really don't think it matters.
Right.
That's where the irony poison can kind of fuck you over and make you to just make it worse for that person. Right.
Yeah, I guess that maybe that's like the Zoomer thing. Like people who are like actively, if you look at your friend's problems and you're like, your problems are bullshit, you're not being ironic. You're an asshole. I think that's pretty much front and center. I guess maybe irony.
It depends on what it is. What if the problem is bullshit? Like what if it's like, my boyfriend didn't like my new profile photo.
But it matters to them, right? Like,
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah.
I guess the thing is, like, I look at it like crack a joke, but what I use irony for in my own sort of world is instant disassociation so that I can look at things from a more objective standpoint.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Fuck yeah. I'm with
that. It's not, it's not that I brush it off and then I'm like fucking done with it. It's more so is if I can immediately approach it from a place where I have no emotional like attachment to it, I'm actually probably going to be able to make a more informed decision about what to do about it.
Yeah. Although I think that because I don't think either of us necessarily do, but like, which might not be a fair thing to say, but live in like, it's easier to do that like in online context and looking at global issues and stuff, right? Where is if you're the one being faced with these given problems,
yeah,
that omniscience is just, it's A, not going to work, and B, it's not, you're not going to do it.
I mean, yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, I guess one example of where I find myself struggling is I kind of get frustrated and a little bit like sort of like nihilistic, or like I maybe approach with some irony the idea that like stuff like ending world hunger and all this bullshit and like, you know, or interventionist politics, because like, oh my God, this regime is like, you know, doing bad things to their people. It's like after, especially after going through the Arab Spring and like being at that point when that happened, I was in grade 12, I was in student union, and I was the guy that actively campaigned to like make China and Russia get out of Syria and all that shit.
Yeah.
And I think that it's just like really it's just naive to think that we have any sort of impact on global issues with social media. Like that's much more dangerous in my opinion than having like a more realistic understanding. Like people, if a government wants to basically make quorum, like get 50% of the population on board with invading a country, social media is a great way to help make that happen, you know?
Yeah.
And the thing is, that's almost never, ever been a good idea. And when it has been a good idea, it usually doesn't happen. Like a good example maybe would be like Rwanda, which didn't really have any actual intervention when there was an actual genocide. Meanwhile, like, I don't want to go too deep into anything inflammatory, but I do think that like, there's a lot of complex issues where like maybe we don't agree with the government of a country, but Libya, for example, is in a really bad place right now because they don't even have any semblance of control. Like everyone there is.
I went down that rabbit hole big time many years ago. The
Gaddafi
kind of rabbit hole.
Yeah, it's like, hey,
good documentary.
I'll be the first one to say fuck Gaddafi. You know, I'll say that first more than anyone. But is it better to have at least like some semblance of power structure than to have people running around like just fucking shit up constantly? I don't know. That's not for me to decide, but I do think that I don't agree.
You're saying that's a byproduct of American intervention, right?
Exactly. Well, 100% in my opinion. Yeah.
Not in your, that's and, true. That's, I think that's objectively true.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no subjective thing about that. That's just what happened.
Yeah.
They got him. I'm pretty sure they like, there was a press conference at one point where they're like, we fucked them up. And that's really scary in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, it's complicated.
It is 100% complicated.
I guess in the grander scheme of things, though, what is the harm in using sort of a right wing term like virtue signaling or whatever? Like, what is the harm? Is that's something I always try to think about? Like when I kind of feel like annoyed by sort of what feels like hollow virtuousness.
Yeah,
I always kind of just like think like I'm like fuck it. It's coming from a good place. Don't be a dick, JP.
And I also think that, I mean, as long as it's not, you know, calling for armed intervention in a foreign country, the metrics will show usually that, like, I haven't looked at the metrics, even though it's in the family business, you know, going back to that part.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that if sometimes you're like, oh, these people are just sharing shit and they don't do anything. If even 10% of people that share something end up donating to that cause, like that's obviously extremely positive. So
yeah,
in terms of like issues like that, of course, but it's more so just, I find the government's really good at manipulating people and social media is a tool that really kind of helps that. And, and this is again, only in terms of interventionism. I'm like literally America pre-World War I. I'm like, fuck no, man. We're staying the fuck out of it. You know, that's my vibe. And then everyone else is Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah, okay.
Nah, I don't know. It's so complex, man. I guess I'm really just coming at it from a point of, you know, it's just tough. And I think it boils down to a lot more than just, you know, social media. So it kind of gets a little frustrating sometimes.
Yeah, I'll be the first to clarify that, none of this is a bag of my expertise. I'm an art boy, you know, at my core. I look at Rothko paintings and think about that. I'm not a political theorist or anything, you know?
Yeah, I think, and that's the thing, man. I 100% am not, yeah. By the way, political
theorists read books, though. You seem like you read books and shit, right?
I'm learned. I mean, I did a year of poli sci, but like, that's not exactly.
Better than nothing.
Yeah, it's definitely, I was on the right track. I'm not a big fan of, you know, institutional education in a lot of senses. I think a lot of it's kind of little, dude, you know what? This is fucking crazy, man, because there's like this brutal, like left centralist, like paradigm where it's like, if I criticize this like very, very centrist, not actually progressive at all, but very centrist, a little liberal, like worldview, people just, unless I clarify that I'm like, by the way, I'm extremely left-wing. Like, I am extremely left-wing.
Yeah.
But if I don't clarify that, people are always just like, dude, what is this right-wing piece of shit? But it's like, yeah. I'm not criticizing leftism. I'm criticizing establishment liberalism. Like, that shit is fucking toxic.
You don't know? Like the neolibs. The neolibs.
Yeah, they're right. Awful. They're disgusting. And, you know, the blood of innocence is on their hands, man. Mm-hmm. You can cut that out. That's a little.
I'm not cutting out shit, man. Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's just frustrating. We live in the Joe Biden thing just pisses me off too. Like, of course, way better than Trump. No one's disagreeing with that. But no. I got to criticize the guy. Am I not allowed to criticize the guy? He's a piece of shit.
Yeah. Well, he's just establishment, right? You know?
Yeah, he's garbage. He's not actually going to do anything progressive.
No. Well, he didn't run on that though, you know?
Didn't have to. That's the beauty of the Trump campaign, is now the liberals don't even have to be liberal anymore. It's almost like they wanted him to win. It's genius, man. The Dems can spend the next 20 years being like right of center and still seem progressive.
Yeah. That's true. I never really thought about that.
Oh, it's fucked. It's fucked, man.
Yeah. Hell yeah, dude. Let's go. We've reached Joe Rogan territory here, bud. Fucking hell yeah.
Dude, someone's got to come in and unseat that guy, you know? Someone even more irrational has to come in and fuck with Joe Rogan, dude.
Yeah, and it's not me, it's you, man.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you're shifting the weight of this onto me, too. I appreciate
it. Yeah, hell
that.
Yeah, of course. That's the host duty, man. No, I don't want to be Joe Rogan. I want to be like 60 Minutes, but cool or something. I don't know.
You want to be the guys from Stuff You Should Know. You want to be the guy that sounds really sexy.
Yeah. I like Letterman. That's the guy I look up to the most is Letterman.
Honestly. David Letterman?
David Letterman, yeah. I think he's a killer interview because he just kind of sits there and he just goes, yeah, yeah. Which I kind of like, you know?
Yeah. Incredible. His vibe is so good that he instigates conversation by just sitting there.
Yeah, exactly. It's so good. Like when he interviewed Kanye, you know, you remember the first thing he asked him?
No.
What'd you have for breakfast?
Oh,
that's so fucking good.
Masterful, dude. Yeah. Masterful.
And Kanye had scrambled eggs.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like something about that I thought was awesome. Yeah. I was curious about this might be a bad question, but listening to your music, you evoke a lot of God and a lot of Jesus. Mm-hmm. What's that all about?
I feel like I was robbed of a religious upbringing in a lot of ways, you know? Like,
that's an awesome answer, dude.
It's true, though. You know, I come from an extremely agnostic household. No one's an atheist. Yeah. I mean, and by the way, atheists are dicks.
Yeah,
I really hate atheists because it's like, how dare you think you know everything? You're just as bad as a fundamentalist religious person if you think you know everything. But especially after I came back from Indonesia, I lived with like a Muslim family, and just like being in a culture where they're all very progressive there. It's the biggest Muslim country in the world, but they're like just living regular lives. We'd go out to the nightclub, party. But like religion is still a fundamental tenet of their life, you know? And you know, coming
like
from the
philosophical
West Coast,
structure almost, right? Like,
yeah. And just like, I mean, the thing is the reality of our lives, or at least, you know, my family's life and a lot of people that are from like England, but came over on the boats or whatever, there, we have like a either Catholic or Protestant sort of like fundamental family structure and all this shit, all these ideals.
Yeah, that's my grandparents are that exactly.
Yeah, and that's been like that for hundreds and hundreds of years. And so to not really, it's kind of like I was taught all these rules and all these ways to live my life without ever being explained why. I missed out on like, oh, and by the way, the reason is God and you're going to hell.
Yeah,
and
there's no deity nice. There to kind of have that sort of fear, honestly.
No, exactly. Yeah. And there is that whole conversation about the death of God and how...
Then you have parafears, right? Which are kind of worse because God is esoteric, right? Whereas your parafears are like, it's like, oh, I might disappoint my parents. I might disappoint society. I might disappoint my teachers. God is way better because God's not right in your face.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
you just kind of got to do it at all times, right?
There's have you ever watched Dreg on YouTube? J-Reg?
I'm familiar. I have some friends that like that stuff. I haven't watched it though.
You know what's crazy? I'm just going to sidebar this before I go into the J-Reg story. Is I was hanging out at a friend's house last night, and I just met her recently, and I was like talking about how I hate the center, and like I believe in, you know, basically Dreg has this
vibe.
Where
were you guys smoking weed?
Oh, no, actually, surprisingly not. But
okay.
But speaking of, well, we'll figure that out in a bit. But anyway, Dreg has this beautiful philosophy called centricide. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but no. It's basically like,
enlighten me.
Extreme right politics or extreme left politics is better than this bullshit neoliberal centrist.
Yeah, okay.
You know, it's just extreme, like postmodernism, you know? It's like taking irony to such a crazy extent that it's just like, it's just teasing the entire idea of like, why do we take political structures so seriously anyway? Like, they're all just ideological and very few of them actually have any sort of, you know, frameworks to work within. But I guess my point was he parodied Jordan Peterson, because Jordan Peterson is just a fucking nut job, obviously. But I don't have to tell you that. Everyone knows that.
I have big problems with the other JP, you know?
Yeah. Well, that must be tough for you, especially because your real name is Jordan Peterson Meldrum, right? And so you have to shorten it to JP.
Yeah, it sucks.
But he has this bullshit about how, like, oh, we have to live life within frameworks and, like...
That being said, I would love to talk to him, that being said.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, he almost died, hey? That's crazy, dude.
That's some kind of... that makes me think God is real. To be honest. No. And hear me out. It's just simply because this guy that's entire mantra was clean your room, pull up your pants, be a man, got hooked on fucking Xanax.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
And I empathize with why he got hooked on Xanax and stuff. He was dealing with extreme sudden fame and feedback, and his wife was dying.
Yeah. Not a great mix.
But there is the kind of, you know, biblical wrath of God there, you know.
He's back, right? He just did his new thing. He published a video. Yeah. His daughter's had him on this diet of only eating meat.
She's evil. Jordan Peterson is a guy who shouldn't talk about a lot of things he talks about. His daughter is evil. That's what I think.
I also wonder how society at large would have approached Jordan Peterson's philosophy like in the 90s.
He would have been a Christopher Hitchens type.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel he would have been like, oh, no, he's just like one of the horsemen of like atheism. But he's not, obviously. He's a Christian guy. He believes that like the
bullshit.
Fundamental tenet. Yeah, it's interesting, though. He would have been approached as like just an, you know, because the same thing could be said about Christopher Hitchens today. It's like, dude, you're an insensitive piece of shit, by the way, you know?
Yeah, I liked his triangulation thing. I don't fully understand it, but I like that idea.
It's just crazy that people can make a living just fucking lying to people. Like, I want to get that job, dude. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Just say whatever you want about how the world works. Like, they're no better and no different than fucking televangelists. It's the exact same fucking formula.
Those guys in particular, I completely agree.
It's just like, find lost souls and give them frameworks in which to live their lives. Yeah. And then get money from them.
Well, and what sucks about your JPs and stuff is that, like, you know, I mean, you should clean up your fucking room, but everything else that comes with it, I don't know so much about, you know,
but
it's easy to be like, oh, fuck, I never heard it put so bluntly. And then you kind of submit to it. And da, 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 da. It's a problem with dogma, period.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing is, I mean, the reason I explore religion a lot in my music is because I do find it interesting how basically people just become so much more secure when they have like frameworks, essentially. Like, he's not wrong that people enjoy frameworks. What he's wrong about is that they're a good thing, positive. They're not necessarily a positive force, but it is true that people feel comfortable when they surrender their like individuality to like some higher power or to some like Stalin, for instance. Slavoj Žižek says in The Perverse Guide to Ideology that Stalin talked about, like, and that's a great movie too. About how Stalin talked about the great other. It's like, you're not doing this for me. You're not doing this for the Soviet Union. You're doing this for like the future of humanity, like this big other goal. And that was framed entirely the same way that, you know, religious people have always framed religion. And it's a really good way to get people to do stuff. It's crazy. It doesn't make it right. But I think human beings are, for the first time since like maybe hunter-gatherers, like living primarily within a lack of framework. Like, nothing matters. And yeah. we're seeing that sort of affect people in a lot of interesting ways. Not necessarily negative.
People are finding really abstract frameworks too, I think. Yeah, and exactly. I can't think of great examples of that, but that's certainly true.
Yeah. I guess for me,
well, Jordan Peterson actually is a great example of a guy you could kind of see in a dogmatic way and end up following his really abstract framework, right? Like,
of course.
But
of course.
I do think seeking framework is healthy, but you should avoid the same reason you should avoid like completely submitting to adulthood.
Yeah,
you know,
don't surrender yourself to anything.
Yeah, but seeking it is good. It's almost like, you know, like a road trip should never end.
It's eat, pray, love, man.
Yeah,
you gotta go out and yeah. you know, it's really the journey that is the beautiful thing, not necessarily the destination.
Elizabeth Gilbert too, you know.
Yeah, of like course, her. Dude.
Yeah,
for president, Elizabeth's for president.
Yeah,
let's go.
We're not far from that, man.
Hopefully, God, yeah. but she's not 80 fucking years old.
Yeah, Elizabeth Gilbert, Dwayne the Rock Johnson ticket. Let's go.
Can you imagine? I honestly see a path for Dwayne to first get. Well, actually, I see a path for. Okay, here's the thing. No, I don't.
He makes too much money doing what he does otherwise, and he's not Trump. You know what yeah. I mean? I can't see him actually doing that.
I was going to say that if Schwarzenegger was born in the States, which obviously he's not, he would definitely be a huge, huge bid for the next president, dude.
For the next Republican ticket.
Maybe.
Well, he's a Republican.
But he's so progressive for Republican. It's crazy. I guess California Republicans are super progressive.
Yeah, in Southern California.
Yeah. But I mean, he legalized weed right before he left office, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty badass.
Hell yeah. Dude, that's not an issue anymore, which is kind of sick, though.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody doesn't care anymore, dude. Like, the war on drugs ended like a week ago, is what people have been saying, at least.
Well, in Oregon, I mean, yeah, it's crazy. I think the problem is blow, though. I mean, stuff.
Don't
like
legalize.
That.
I mean, maybe legalize blow.
Well, but something has to happen, man. Because the
fentanyl. You like doing blow?
Crazy.
Do you do blow?
No. Not a really big user of any drugs, to be honest. Even weed these days, kind of.
Yeah.
I have to be really careful with it, just because I get a little like in my head, you know.
Me too. I'm the same way. Yeah.
I find it funny. I mean, I think it's just a natural thing for a lot of people. The you know, once you hit your mid 20s, it's hilarious to talk about myself as if I'm old, but I definitely feel a little bit more like creaky boned than I did my early 20s. And I just kind of slowed down on everything, you know. It's like,
yeah,
you gotta respect your body, man.
Yeah, 100%. I still eat like shit, but I drink less. That's
yeah,
for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I mean, you're not gonna have a hangover from eating fucking KFC or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
that's what. Well, actually, that's a lie. There's a Popeyes that just opened up down from my fucking house.
KFC's bad. Yeah, KFC, Domino's Pizza, kind of get a hangover from those.
Dude,
not
the
gonna
spicy
get it from sushi.
No, well, that's of course not. Sushi is a beautiful, healthy meal. There's seaweed.
I'm a big fan. Yeah,
dude, I love sushi.
I think it's an underrated first food of the day too. I think about that a lot.
That's a really interesting point.
It's a great way to like tease your hunger, tease your palate.
So what is that your meal? Your go-to meal is sushi in the morning?
No, I usually eat two eggs in the morning.
Okay, respect. This is my thing. I haven't actually made my diet like any better, but I started doing intermittent fasting in like February.
Yeah.
And so I don't eat anything until like 4 or 5 every day.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. It's weird though, because then when I do eat, like my body shuts the fuck down.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, food. And then I'm just like 2 hours where I'm just lying there like totally stuck.
I get that too.
It's insane. But hey, it's fine. It's like the lazy person's way to lose weight. It's just don't eat, I guess.
Yeah.
But that also develops a host of other problems, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's super dangerous to
I do it by
neglect
accident
food
all the time too, just because I recently got a job where I work roughly 9 to 5. But I'm working in a kitchen.
Yeah.
So, and you'd think you'd eat, but I don't.
Well, it's tough.
I just don't eat.
Right?
I just drink coffee.
You don't have time. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, also, like, when I worked in the kitchen, it's like, where the fuck am I going to eat my staff meal, dude? Like, on a upside down garbage can?
Yeah, that's how I always eat. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. It's not fun. Like, I'm not going to eat without atmosphere, bro. Like, give me a fucking candle or something. Bullshit.
Yeah. I kind of like the mad dash to eat. I like the kind of chaos of that.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Talking about? We're talking about God. There's something before that. I don't know.
Mostly God, you know, we did the God thing. God, but basically my point is I used to be an atheist. I think that religious people are beautiful people. Everyone can get along. But if you believe too hard in anything, you're a fucking idiot. Everyone calm down. Everyone calm down, basically.
Yeah, I can get behind that. What's next? What are you working on? What do you got coming?
finishing up Mean Mr. Mouth Breather, which is my third record, and that should be out, I think, January, some point in January, Mean Mr. Mouth Breather. And then I'm working on my Sea Change, basically.
Okay, you're doing your Sad Boy album.
Yeah, it's all nylon string guitar for the moment. I might change that.
I love the sound of those, though, man.
Oh, they're gorgeous. And man, again, I feel like my laziness is...
Are you finger picking and stuff? Like, ooh, it sounds...
I might actually get my brother on the record to finger pick, because I haven't played like instruments in years. Like, I just use a MIDI keyboard, you know? So
you're a Logic guy, right? You use Logic? Yeah.
Logic Pro X.
I think I recognize some of the VSTs you use. You used Arteria stuff in there, right?
Yeah.
I heard the Mellotron. The Arteria Mellotron in there. That shit rocks. It's so good.
Dude, that shit's amazing, man.
Yeah. Dude, I use the demos, right? Like, I just use the demos.
Wait, how?
They last 20 minutes.
Oh, and then you sample it, and then you bounce it. That's just smart. Why would you pay for anything?
It's too expensive. Those are too expensive.
I think that I bought some VSTs. Like,
I could support that. Like, the amount of work that goes into that and stuff. I bought some of the Valhalla reverbs and stuff.
I think that there just seems to be more of a precedent for, like, young artists. Like, with video games right now, if you're using Unity or Unreal, unless you make a certain amount of money, it's completely free to use all their tools, right? And then once you're in their framework and then you're starting to make money, then they just take a percentage. Obviously, it's harder with VSTs.
Model.
But like, they need to do that. Like, a lot of artists are just unable to afford that. And like, I have always been the kind of guy where it's like, if you want to go to a studio, good for you. But in my opinion, it's a waste of fucking time. You can just make music in your bedroom. Like, and so do it. Yeah. You know, it's way cheaper and you can make great music in your bedroom.
Yeah,
and
the hip hop stuff I make sounds almost as good as anything you could do in studio.
Well, and especially I use this hip hop. Oh, hell yeah. What is that, a 58, a Beta 58?
Beta 58, yeah. It's so good. Dude.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great mic, man.
It's a great mic, yeah. It's not even mine.
You stole it?
It's my mom's.
Nah, you stole it from your mom?
I stole it from my mom. Yeah, I'm going to buy, she wants me to buy my own. I will.
Damn. Yeah. So your mom works in audio too?
Nah, she's in a choir.
She got a Beta 58 to be in a choir? It's like
she just did some internet research and was just like, you know what? Especially when COVID hit and they were doing like Zoom stuff. I think that was when she got this. I'm not 100% sure of the story.
Damn. That is a great choice, man. That is a really good mic.
Yeah, it's a great mic. Dude, vocals, instruments, all of it. It's great.
It's also a great mic for kicks.
Really?
Yeah. Leisure Suit used a Beta 58 on their record.
Oh, yeah. I like Leisure Suit. I forgot about those guys. I wonder what they're doing.
Yeah, Oliver's around. I mean, he's also the Fort Langley guy, too. So you should hit him up for an interview sometime. Yeah, man. He's hilarious.
It's in my notes now. Oh, yeah. There's another thing I wanted to ask you about was, what does the new record sound like? The one that you say is done. Was it Mean Mr. Mouth Breather? That's what it's called?
Yeah, Mean Mr. Mouth Breather. Yeah. Well, the thing is, my management have a very new and radical way of releasing music that... But you know when that... What's that fucking Spotify guy, the CEO? I don't know his name,
but fuck that shit he's doing. Promotion thing?
Thorne Johnson or whatever. I don't know.
Something very Eastern European. Yeah.
He's from Sweden or something. Yeah. I don't know. But basically, he said, if you want to make a living making music these days, you got to release like more than one record a year. Like, you got to be putting out singles all the time.
It's true.
And as much as like I sympathize with my fellow musicians that, you know, they like really handcraft something and spend a lot of time on it. The worst part is when you spend a year on a record and then it flops. What a fucking waste of time, man. Like, at least it's like, the thing is
I'll be honest though, Owen, I don't care anymore. Yeah, I don't look at my stats. I just put out fucking music cause I'm done with it.
Exactly. I don't and if that's the framework that you're in where it's like, I just want to make music for me.
Kanye too had a philosophy about that I really like. And he's just simply like, he's like, if I made something, and the day that I want to put it out, I'm not feeling it myself, I won't put it out.
Respect, dude.
That's all I care about.
That because he's fucking Kanye West.
Yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
It's easy for him to say, man. It's not like he's going to be like not a billionaire if he doesn't release this album. I guess the thing is, like, I know a lot of people that put the thing is, too, it correlates with people who go to studios and spend like thousands of dollars. You know? And so what's the reason why are you spending thousands of dollars to make music just for you? No. If you're making music just for you, you do it on fucking GarageBand. Like, just make music for you know? So the problem with that format is if they do that all and they get it mixed and mastered professionally, thousands of dollars in, and they release it all at once and it doesn't pick up, wow. That's just, it's, and even though, you know what, it's probably a great album and I'll listen to it because I fucking love listening to my friend's music.
Yeah.
which I'm sure we all do. I don't know why I said that, dude.
So, no, but, man, you know. I used to be really bad about that. I used to, like, be like, yeah, man, and I would half-heartedly listen to something. I actually listen now. I make a good point of doing that.
Dude, I just find it way more entertaining, unless it's, like, like the new Fleet Foxes album, for instance. Like, I'll listen to that all day. But, like, most of the time, I'd rather listen to my friend's music because there's a tangible, like,
Wait, there's connection. A new Fleet Foxes album? I didn't know.
Yeah,
that.
Dude, Shore came out, like, 2 months ago. It's the one best before
the one that came out after, like, a long time.
Yeah, well, Crack Up came out in 2015, and that one was garbage.
You didn't like Crack Up, eh?
Oh, you like Crack Up?
Yeah, that Fool's Errand song is amazing.
Yeah, maybe.
I thought it was, like, I love the krautrock influence on it. It was just, like, it was so psyche. It was so, the choral harmonies and stuff, just fucking, I loved it. I loved it.
You know what?
It.
Yeah. I think that's where I came from. Basically, what I had a problem with Crack Up is I thought that they were, like,
it feels
long. But also, it's like they were such a niche band in 2010, and they were so good at what they did that I felt Crack Up was them trying to sort of be a bit more with the times, and I hated it. I'm like, don't be with the times. Do your thing. Shore is like vintage 2010 Fleet Foxes.
Okay, I'll give it a listen today.
Oh, I'm done. It's crazy good, man. It is so good. But all that is to say, it's like, you know, regularly, though, I'd rather listen to my friend's music because, yeah, like I said, there's a connection there. Like, I actually know this fucking guy. So listening to a good song by somebody I actually know is so much sweeter, you know?
Yeah. Well, and also, if you've been friends with people long enough, they get better. Their music gets better.
Isn't that crazy, man?
I love that.
You could
that.
Be the shittiest fucking musician, but if you just keep at it, you're going to make something good eventually.
Yeah.
Malcolm Gladwell, baby. Let's go.
10,000 hours, yeah. I don't love the 10,000 hours. I've talked about that before on here, but
I don't love Malcolm Gladwell. I think he's a prick, but
yeah.
We'll talk about some other time.
Who are some of your friends? Who are some of your friends' music? Let's plug some of your dogs.
Oh, hell yeah. Well, Pleasure Craft, obviously. I don't know if you've heard of Pleasure Craft.
But, I have heard of them, but I have not listened to them.
I think I saw
them play once, I think.
Yeah, it's not the German techno band. It's like a Toronto-based like dark band.
I think they're on a label that I follow on Bandcamp. That might be it.
They might be. I don't know. They were on, like, they're working with Coalition for a bit. I'm not sure what his label situation is right now, but he got a mad shout out from Fantana recently, so I'm stoked for him for that.
Hell
that was
sick.
And then other than that, I mean, we got my brother's new band, Acapulco Gold. So if you ever liked any of the music,
how do you spell Acapulco? I don't know.
Acapulco, like the Mexican town, Acupulco, and then gold, like the element.
French. Or,
oh yeah. Well, he should change his fucking name. I guess when he does a French translation of the record, you'll probably
see. Yeah. When he does the dub.
Yeah. Lore d'Acapulco.
Yeah. Hell yeah. anyone else? Oh, there's Madeline. Is that Madeline?
Yeah. So I've been working with Madeline recently.
Yeah, that song slaps. That song slaps.
She's great. We're doing some more sessions next month, so I hope we can get some bangers out of it. But God, she is the hardest working person I've ever met in my life.
Yeah, she can sing her ass off too, man.
Crazy. Dude, so good at networking. She's also an actor, and she's in this movie that just came out called Aquaslash. It's like a really low budget horror film from Montreal, and she plays like the what do you call it, not the valedictorian, but like the class everyone picks, the one, like, there's the valedictorian is like the nerd, and then there's the other one that's like picked by the class.
Class president,
I guess. So something like that.
I don't know.
She plays that, and then at one point she gets like cut in four pieces down a water slide. Oh, it's so good, man. She's so talented. So she's great. Also, watch out for PAX. I don't know if you heard about PAX.
Like the Penny Arcade Expo PAX? Is that how it's spelled?
Well, she used to spell it like that, but now it's spelled PACKS. Just got signed to Royal Mountain and another label in the States. Okay. And my brother plays drums for her, but
I follow them on Bandcamp as well.
Yeah, they are. Oh my God, she writes like crazy music, man. It's nuts. It's fucking nuts, man. That's all I can say about that. Just check it out. It's really good. It's amazing.
Cool. Okay. Hey, one sec. Hey, Cam, I'm doing an interview.
Get out of here.
It's my brother. it's all good. He just got home.
Respect.
Yeah. Cool. I think that's it. I think that's all we got.
This is a beautiful
anything,
time.
Anything you want to say?
I don't know, man. You took me down some great paths. It's just great chatting with you. You're a great host, man. That's
thanks,
great.
Man. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. All right, yeah, Mouth Breather, check it out. It's good
right
shit.
On. Cheers, JP. Or should I say Jordan Peterson Meldrum? Get that in one more time.
All right, cool. I'm going to stop recording.